Oh, that's all right. I think my background is significantly different than just about any other student that was there, because I had gone to the university from 1959 to 1963, and then I went into the Air Force.
Okay.
And I was in the military and in Vietnam in 65 and 67, about 65 to 67. Then I got out and came back to the university and found a whole different, kind of a whole different world, a whole different way of looking at the world than when I left. And then I happened to be in that spot standing and watching the riots take place. So I just thought it was a
wow.
My perspective would be just a little different than the average student that was just there. I think a lot of them kind of having fun protesting, so to speak. I mean, it was kind of almost a teenage game they were playing. I mean, yeah, they were upset with Dow, but I don't think they really truly knew what they were doing or what they were all about. But that's just, you know, I mean, when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you have one way of looking at the world. When you're 26 or 27, yeah, you have a different way, especially if you've been to Vietnam and mm-hmm. been involved in the war.
I see. So before you elaborate your fascinating story, would you provide us with a brief chronology of your life till the second time you came back to the campus?
Yeah, I would. I'm from Racine, Wisconsin. I was born in Racine. Grew up in Racine, went to public school, and then went to Racine Lutheran High School for mm-hmm. sophomore, junior, and senior years. So I wouldn't say that I had a religious education, but I mean it was a religious high school, and then I went to the UW Extension in Racine mm-hmm. for my first year, mm-hmm. and then sophomore, junior, and senior years I was in Madison. I lived out I think the first year I lived out on Elm Drive.
Okay, Elm
Drive. Elm Drive used to be, back in those days, Elm Drive C, I mean, they were dorms. Mm-hmm. Now they're more offices, I think, than they were back then. And I joined a fraternity, lived in the fraternity house mm-hmm. for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I was just kind of I started out in engineering, I wasn't really ready to study that hard, and I was not doing well. I mean, I was getting by, but that's about all that happened. And then between my junior and senior years, I got very sick and missed all my final exams at the end of my junior year because I was that ill. I was literally I had mononucleosis, which was fairly common back in those days. And I was at the UW hospital for a week, and mm-hmm. then I was home for 3 or 4 weeks, missed all my finals. And then, being a typical young student, I was offered a chance to take the finals, and I put it off and put it off and put it off and put it off until literally the end of the next semester. So I was taking double finals at the end of the semester, and needless to say, I did not do very well.
Yeah.
So I was, to put it bluntly, I was on final probation in my last semester.
Yeah.
And I mean, to kind of tell the whole story, I was down to a point where there was an English class that teaching assistant basically was, you know, you go to a lecture, but the teaching assistant was really the person who kind of monitored you and gave you your grade.
Yeah.
And it really came down to whether if he gave me I think he had to give me a B, and I would still be in school, or if he gave me a C, or a D, I would be out of school because my grade point would be that low. So I asked him one day, I said, well, you know, can you tell me what, I was right near the end of the semester, and I said, well, can you tell me what grade I'm going to get? And he said, well, based on your work, you should get a B, but based on your attendance, you probably should get a D. And I thought, this guy is going to determine my whole future. And I really didn't want that to happen. And then I also thought, well, I've got, if he does give me a B, I've got one more semester to finish up so I could graduate. And I thought, I don't know what I want to do. And the last thing I want to do is end up being a shoe salesman or an insurance salesman. So I thought, oh, to heck with it. I'm going to make my own decision. Mm-hmm. So I decided to quit school and join the military. And I didn't want to go into the Army. I didn't want to go into the Marines. I mean, I didn't want to be a ground fighter and shoot guns. So, and the Navy wanted a 6-year commitment to be able to go into nuclear submarines, which I thought would be interesting. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to give up 6 years, so I ended up joining the Air Force. And the Air Force went into basic training, and then it was a question of, well, what are you going to do for the next 4 years? So you go into this big, huge building, and there's hundreds of guys sitting at desks, and they say, go sit with that guy, and we'll decide what you're going to do for the next 4 years. So
and I went that's in 1960.
This is in 1963.
I see.
So I went and sat down, and he said, well, what would you like to do? Were you 4 years in the Air Force?
Yes.
And I said, well, I'd like to go into photo interpretation, because I was told that was an interesting field, and it was part of the area of intelligence, and I thought that would be interesting. And he kind of goes through his Rolodex, which, you know, didn't have computers back then. He just went through his little paper thing.
Yeah.
And he looks at it, and he says, well, geez, I'm really sorry, but that's full. What else would you like to do? And I said, I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, how would you like to go to Yale University and study Chinese? And I said, well, that sounds kind of neat, but I had just finished up 4 years of college and was sick and tired of it. But I thought, well, let's see, Vietnam is just starting to heat up. If I study Chinese, then I won't go to Vietnam. Of course, after 4 years of college at the University of Wisconsin, I had no idea where Vietnam was located, and I had no idea that there was a, I don't know, 500 or 600 mile border connecting Vietnam and China. So, you know, stupidly, I was thinking Chinese, I wouldn't go to Vietnam. Well, needless to say, anyway, I did do that. Went to studied Chinese for a year at Yale, and then did about another year of studying, just learning my job, because it was what I ended up doing was I was back in those days what they called a spy in the sky. I was a Chinese linguist on a C-130 aircraft.
Oh.
That would listen to the Chinese Air Force is basically what we did.
Okay.
But I ended up, needless to say, I was stationed in Japan, but ended up going TDY to Vietnam for about a year and a half, flying out of Da Nang. So ended up getting involved in the Vietnam War anyway, which was just then really starting to really accelerate and became a very, very serious war. And then after that, after 4 years in the Air Force, got out and went back to school because I needed one more year to finish up. And of course, you get back to the university after 4 years of 4 years of being in the Air Force, and you look around and everybody looks like they're high school kids. But what really surprised me, the biggest difference I found, well, there were two things. Obviously, there were anti-war protests all over the place, and some of them I would say were reasonably serious, and some of them were kind of silly, because you'd walk up to a building you wanted to go in to take a class, and you'd be a bunch of students out there yelling, power to the people, boycott grapes, which, you know, Cesar Chavez and trying to help the Mexican workers that were being sort of badly treated out in California, but still, power to the people, boycott grapes. I mean, it's kind of a silly slogan. And I would attend. There was several classes where I would go in and listen to the lecturer, and he would start talking, I would say, in my mind, sort of nonsense about the people that were trying to defend their country and do what the country asked of them.
Who are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to all of the military that was over in Vietnam.
No, I mean, who talked about those?
Professors. I was taking economics, so there were economics professors.
Okay.
And they would start, they'd start talking about the baby killers and whatever, and on several occasions I had to get up and walk out. I just spent 4 years in the military.
Yeah.
And to have some professor at the University of Wisconsin speaking badly of the military and what they were trying to do and trying to achieve, I found that was offensive.
Right. And that's your first semester back was in fall.
Yeah, 1967. It was the fall of 1967, which is when the Dow riots took place. And but I mean, I certainly understand. I mean, I'm not even a big fan of the Vietnam War, but I was asked to serve, and that's where I was asked to go and serve, so that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to put the Vietnam War in context with back in those days, it was kind of like stop the progress of communism throughout the world, and Vietnam was decided as that's one place where we're gonna say no, enough is enough, and because if Vietnam fell, then most of Southeast Asia would have fallen to China, communist rulers. So that's basically, I think that was the real reason why America was involved there. So, today people kind of forget that, but that was the purpose back then. But yeah, then coming back to the Dow riots, I happened to be walking. I don't know whether I'd had a class in the building across the street from the Comm building, which was the Commerce building back in those days. But I came out and there was this big crowd of people, and I stood up. There was a little wall around the Carillon, the bell tower, right across the street, and I was standing on the little, there was a, oh, maybe a
platform,
little platform about that big around, or that high around the Carillon, so
yeah.
I was standing on that so I could watch what was going on. So I just stood there for about an hour and watched the police show up and whatever. I wasn't inside. I was outside in the crowd watching everything that took place.
So, could you recall in details of that day when what did you see for in
well,
this
what I saw
yeah.
was I saw the crowd standing around outside.
Yeah,
there were probably 500,000 people standing around, kind of. Well, I mean, there was a whole group of people inside in the hallway, sitting down, arms clinging together, protesting Dow Chemical, which was coming to interview people.
Yeah,
and understandably, they were the makers of napalm. I mean, I don't think anybody's a big fan of napalm. And so I'm standing there, and I thought, well, this is interesting. See what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, to me, now this is, you know, this is memories of 50 years ago, somewhat vivid, but yet numbers-wise, you know, I'm not sure I'm accurate about numbers, but it seemed to me like there was, all of a sudden showed up about, I don't know, 20, 25 police.
Okay.
In a group. Mm-hmm. And their intention was to go into the comm building and bring these students out, you know, and the sit-in. And I'm standing there going, 20 police, a couple hundred kids inside, and a crowd of, I don't know, 500,000 people outside, because it was growing also. I mean, people realized, well, there's going to be a confrontation here. So we all kind of stood there, waiting to see what was going to happen.
Right.
Basically, what happened is they went in to try to bring the kids out and were totally unsuccessful, to the point where, in effect, the police were totally incapable of controlling anything. I mean, they didn't have enough people to do anything. And they came out, and they were all kind of disheveled and looked like they'd look more like they gotten beaten up than the kids got beat up. And the crowd was all yelling and screaming, and you know, they were all pro, you know, pro the students. So I just stood there and watched it. And then finally I thought, well, okay, that's enough of that. You know, there's gonna be more police showing up. So I went down to the student union and had a cup of coffee. And while I was sitting there having a cup of coffee, all of a sudden this student comes running in. He's obviously been hit on the head, probably with a police baton or something. Uh-huh. And he's bleeding, and he comes running into the Rathskeller down at the student union, and he's yelling, "The revolution has started. Everybody, you know, join in, the revolution's beginning." And he's running through the Rathskeller, and most of the students just looked at him like, who is this nutcase? You know, this nut job. And he just, and literally nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And then when I walked back up the hill, by then they had cleared out this is my memory of it anyway, they had cleared out the B-10, you know, the hallway in the comm building, and there were, I don't know whether it was the same day or the next day, but there were National Guard troops about, if I remember correctly, about a yard apart, and they were all standing at they're all the way around the building, standing at attention, rifle, holding their rifle like this, and with the bayonet on the rifle. And it was just like, oh my God, you know, the National Guard has been called in to the university to quell this whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was, and then the next couple of days it was kind of humorous, because people would then go up and kind of taunt the National Guard to try to get a reaction, and they could never really get a reaction out of them. They'd go up and, you know, girls would kiss the rifle or what. I mean, it was just lots of silliness that was kind of going on at that time. But, you know, that's kind of my memories of it. The police were, in their own way, were kind of, at least at the beginning, were totally incompetent, because they didn't, mm-hmm. they didn't have enough police to do what they wanted to do, and they didn't, I don't think they really had the training at that time to handle that kind of a situation. So it was all pretty sad, to be perfectly honest. Now I do have to tell you, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Dow Chemical, and I'm not a big fan of Monsanto, because when I was in Vietnam, I was exposed to Agent Orange, and I ended up with prostate cancer, and had my prostate removed. And even today, 20 years later, I now have prostate cancer in my lungs, so I still have prostate cancer, and they can't they can't cure it. They can. It's in remission, but they can't cure it. And that manufacturers of Agent Orange were Dow Chemical and Monsanto and several other big chemical companies. So I'm no big fan of Dow Chemical.
I'm really sorry to hear about that.
Well, it's just one of those. Hey, I didn't lose a leg. I didn't have to shoot anybody. I never got shot at because I was 30,000 feet in the air, flying in an airplane. So
yeah, but in that situation, why would you be exposed to the?
Because Da Nang was the base where they stored Agent Orange and where they, airplanes were loading and unloading Agent Orange and taking off and flying over the jungle and spreading it.
Okay.
So Agent Orange was all over the airbase, and it was, frankly, they had used it all the way around the airbase to clear hundreds of yards of jungle so that the enemy couldn't sneak up on the base and get up to the fence without having to cross probably 500 yards of open fields. So Agent Orange was everywhere. If you were in Vietnam,
yeah,
more than likely you were exposed to Agent Orange. Pretty hard not to be.
Now it's 50 years ago, mm-hmm. And what would be your, if there's any, like your reflection of the Dow protest on that particular event, or and maybe your Vietnam War experience and that period. What's a reflection?
Yeah, well, my reflection is, I think you have to put into context that number one, it was, keep in mind that the main objective was to stop the spread of communism, and they decided that Vietnam was a place to do that. Number two, President Johnson.
Yes.
Was the president at the time. He decided to, I think he made a very bad mistake. He decided to be the, he decided that he was in charge of the military and that he would make decisions about adding troops and putting more troops into Vietnam and escalating the war instead of saying who's the best general that I have, put the general in charge. General, what do you need to win this war and to end it as quickly as possible? Because that stupid war went on from, I think we started having troops in Vietnam probably back in 61 or 62, a few advisors as it were at the time. And then the few advisors turned into 500 troops training South Vietnamese troops, and then the next thing you knew it was 5,000 troops, then 15,000 troops, then 50,000 troops, then 500,000 troops, and then rules of engagement such as you can't bomb Haiphong Harbor because, oh my goodness, you might hit a Russian ship or a Chinese ship that's bringing materials into North Vietnam to help them. Oh, heaven forbid that we would, bomb Haiphong and prevent military supplies from coming in. Couldn't bomb the Air Force bases.
Why?
They were off limits because it would be an escalation of the war.
Because Soviet.
There were some personnel. Soviet pilots and some Soviet, probably some Soviet and even Chinese fighters, fighter jets. I don't know, but there were so many stupid rules that were imposed by politicians instead of if they would have picked a general, some person back in that day who was really understood warfare and whatever, and said, look, we want to make a statement, we're going to fight this war, but we want to fight it with everything we have and we want to get it over as quickly as possible, I think they could have ended that war in matter of weeks. Instead, it dragged on from 1963 to about 1973. What did we do? We lost 50,000 troops. We probably maimed and injured 500,000 troops over the course of that time. And I'd hate to think of how many civilians were killed, maimed, whatever, in the course of 10 years of warfare. I mean, it was just absolutely, if you're going to fight a war, fight it, win it, get it over with as quickly as possible. Less damage, less injuries, less deaths, less everything. Get the war over with. No, but they fought it politically and it went on for 10 years. So I think that was a unfortunate, terrible mistake, but we're making the same mistake today. Instead of having general look at a situation and say this is what I need to get this over as quick as possible, they just go on and on and on and for whatever reason fight it the way they fight it. I don't know. It's just, I think it's wrong.
I see.
But that's my humble opinion. The other thing that I think, going back to the University of Wisconsin, everybody thinks that today you kind of go, oh my goodness, the whole campus was in turmoil, you know, Dow chemical riots, et cetera, et cetera. The fact of the matter is it probably was less than 3% of all the students going to the university. 95% to 98% of the students could have cared less. They were there to get an education. They wanted to learn. They wanted to graduate. And they had no interest in Dow Chemical or the Vietnam War. They just wanted to get through school.
I see. And you were able to sense that.
I was on campus like everybody else. The vast majority of the students were there to learn.
Yes. But that also connects to a question. Did you reveal your identity to them, to your new schoolmates, and how did they perceive you as a veteran?
I was just a student like anybody else. I was an individual. I didn't really. I was interested in finishing up 1 year of school and getting done. I didn't make any bones about the fact that I'd been in Vietnam or I'd been in the Air Force. That didn't bother me. I mean, I think most people could care less one way or another whether I was a veteran or not.
Okay,
but I was just a student trying to graduate like everybody else.
Okay, so you didn't tell your story. Excuse me. Your story to other students, or neither did they ask you about.
Yeah, no. I was just a normal student like anybody else, wanting to graduate.
And did you make new?
And I guess what you're really asking is, was I a political activist in any way? The answer is no. I was not a political activist. I was a little offended in a couple of classes where the professor got political and I thought was saying things that were unnecessary to say and were derogatory, so I once or twice, but they were lecture halls. I mean, I didn't get up and leave from a little study group or anything, but in a big lecture hall when there's 300 or 400 students, if I found him offensive, I would get up and leave. But that was about the only protest I made in my year in my final year at the university.
Did they how would you say they insulted the soldiers or the U.S. Army?
They would either talk very negatively about the war or they would talk negatively about the soldiers. I mean, one of the things that people, you know, you get all excited about a particular position, and then instead of saying, well, these guys are over there, they're brave and they're fighting and they're trying to do a good thing for the United States, suddenly they become, oh my goodness, they're rapists and baby killers and whatever. And you start talking that way, and I'm sorry, I was in the military, and I find that I'm sure there's bad soldiers, just like there's bad everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But to classify the entire military that way is just totally wrong.
Yeah.
Just like it's totally wrong to say the University of Wisconsin is in total uproar and everybody's rioting. I mean, that was not the case.
Yes.
There was a small minority of students that were very, very active and were very dedicated to their cause, if you will. But that was a very, very small, tiny minority. When you look at, I mean, I don't know how many students were at the UW at that time, but there's probably 25 or 30,000 students back in that day. And I would venture to guess there were no more than several hundred that were, I mean, active, sitting down, holding, you know, chains of arms together in the comm building. Yeah, there were 500 or 1,000 people watching the activity, but they were, you know, maybe biased observers, but they were observers. They were not participating in the protest.
I see. And then you graduated a year later with...
Yeah, I graduated in June.
Economics.
Yeah, economics, with a degree in economics, yeah.
I see. Well, Jack, thank you so much for sharing the story.
Yeah, you're very welcome.